Imagine for a moment that you own this colossal network, right? The very backbone of how we all communicate now, cell towers, fiber optic cables, the digital arteries carrying pretty much everything. Then one day you just announce you're selling off a huge chunk of it, a multi-billion dollar deal that basically redefines who you are. What on earth would compel a company to do that? Such a monumental shift, a total reversal, really. Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're diving deep into Crown Castle International Corp, CCI, as it's often known. Now, you might not hear the name every day, but believe me, their infrastructure, absolutely critical to your daily digital life, powering your smartphone, your streaming, well, everything. And they're undergoing one of the most significant transformations in their history. It's a true reshaping of their core identity. And honestly, it's a fascinating case study in corporate strategy.
Yeah, what's truly fascinating here is, like she said, this isn't just some simple corporate reshuffle or selling off a minor asset. No, this is a profound reevaluation of what actually drives sustainable value in the telecommunications landscape, which is evolving so rapidly. It's a really high stakes bet on the future, and it's a decision that's going to directly impact not just how 5G rolls out across the US for years to come, but also, how investors look at these fundamental infrastructure assets.
Right. So our mission for you today is to cut through all the financial jargon, the complex strategic moves, and really understand why Crown Castle is making this pivot. What's the new company going to look like? And maybe more importantly, what does it ultimately mean for the future of US wireless infrastructure? And for you, whether you're an investor, a tech enthusiast, or just someone curious about the unseen forces shaping our digital world, think of this as your shortcut, your inside track to understanding a really complex, high-stakes business decision that's already making some significant waves.
Exactly. And just to map out where we're going today, we'll start by exploring Crown Castle's original kind of expansive vision, that diversified strategy they had, aiming to be a comprehensive 5G infrastructure provider. Then we'll dive into the dramatic and frankly pretty surprising reasons behind this huge shift. We'll dissect the challenges that led to such a radical divestiture. From there, we'll paint a clear picture of the streamlined pure play tower business that's emerging. We'll analyze the competitive landscape it operates in, and finally look at the significant financial implications of this bold move, both for the company and its shareholders.
Okay, so settle in. This is going to be a proper deep dive into the business of keeping us all connected. Okay, so to really get where Crown Castle is heading, we absolutely need to understand where it's been, right? For the better part of the last decade, their whole strategy was about being this integrated, comprehensive 5G leader, a one-stop shop for wireless infrastructure. They weren't just thinking about today, they were building for this anticipated future where, every layer of connectivity would be critical. So what exactly did that ambitious, integrated vision look like before this massive change?
Yeah, you're right to start there, because at its heart, Crown Castle has always been defined by its macro towers. These are the, the foundational assets, the bedrock of the whole business. When we talk about these, we're picturing those tall structures you see everywhere carrying the cellular antennas. We're talking a massive portfolio, over 40,000 towers and other structures strategically spread across all the major U.S. markets. They're the literal backbone of wireless communication, providing that broad coverage that connects your phone to the network, whether you're in a city or driving down the highway.
And what's really compelling about the revenue model for these towers is just how stable it is, isn't it? They're not just selling a service. It's like leasing valuable real estate way up in the sky.
Precisely. The model is, well, it's elegantly simple and incredibly robust. They sign these long-term tenant contracts, usually 10 to 15 years, basically leasing out space on the towers to the big wireless carriers, T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon. But it's not just carriers, they also lease to broadcasters, even government agencies. It's almost like being a landlord for the digital age, But with very high barriers to entry and tenants who pay reliably because they need that critical infrastructure. Once a tower is built, the ongoing operational costs are relatively low, making each additional tenant incredibly profitable.
That idea of additional tenant profitability, that brings it to a key metric, the tenancy ratio.
Yeah.
How does that really show the strength of this core business?
It's a crucial indicator, yeah. As of 2024, Crown Castle had this impressive tenancy ratio around 2.4 tenants per tower. Now, this isn't just some abstract number. It speaks directly to the scalability and profitability. Imagine a tower with space for four sets of antennas. If you have two tenants, the third one. That comes at almost pure profit margin because the land, the foundation, the steel, all the expensive stuff it's already paid for. So that ratio indicates significant room for growth because adding another tenant to an existing tower comes with very, very high incremental margins. A lot of that new revenue just drops straight to the bottom line. It's a highly profitable engine, a real cash cow, represents the core strength.
And looking at their financials, that tower segment was, and I guess still is, a huge part of their operations. In 2024, towers alone generated, what, 67% of Crown Castle's total site rental revenues. So even with this grander vision, towers were clearly the engine room.
Absolutely they were. But for a significant period, the company had this much grander ambition. They made a massive bet on diversification, aiming to be not just a tower company, but an integrated provider of, well, every component of 5G infrastructure. This vision led them to invest heavily in what they called their fiber segment, a business line built meticulously through massive multi-billion-dollar acquisitions. Think Light Tower in 2017, Soonsys in 2015, even NextG Networks way back in 2011, plus, you know, tons of their own capital investment building out networks. The idea was to own the whole connectivity stack.
Right. And this diversification, it had two main components within that fiber segment. First, small cells. Now, for those who might have heard the term but aren't totally sure, what exactly are small cells and why were they seen as so critical for 5G, especially for this integrated vision?
Okay, so small cells are basically compact radio installations. Think of them as miniature, really localized cell towers. Unlike a macro tower that might cover miles, a small cell might just cover a few city blocks or even a specific building. They're often discreetly placed, you know, on utility poles, streetlights, building facades in dense urban areas. They kind of blend in. Crown Castle, at its peak, had about 105,000 of these small cell nodes, either already live or under contract. Their role is absolutely critical for 5G's promise of, like, ultra-fast speeds and low latency, especially in congested areas. Macro towers give you the broad coverage, but small cells are essential for densification, boosting capacity and speed where demand is highest. Think stadiums, busy downtowns, big tech campuses. They're like the precision instruments of the network.
Okay, so small cells for that urban density. And then there was the fiber itself, the actual fiber optic cables. Can you describe that network and its strategic purpose within the whole plan?
Yeah, the fiber network was genuinely extensive, around 90,000 rope miles of fiber optic cable. Now, this fiber served a dual kind of strategic purpose in Crown Castle's integrated model. Crucially, it provided the high-capacity backhaul connectivity, basically the superhighway connecting those small cells back to the wider internet and the rest of the network. Without that fiber backhaul, small cells are just local radios with no connection to the world. But beyond that, this fiber network also generated significant revenue by being leased directly to enterprise customers for their own network needs and also to other wireless carriers for their infrastructure. In 2024, the fiber segment as a whole, combining small cells and the fiber solutions, contributed the remaining 33% of Crown Castle's total site rental revenues.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture then, this integrated model was a really sophisticated bet on capturing every single aspect of 5G deployment. From the wide area coverage of towers to the hyperlocal speed of small cells, all linked by their own fiber. It sounded, well, comprehensive, future-proof, at least on paper. But this naturally raises that critical question. What were the challenges? What were the unseen cracks in this ambitious foundation that ultimately led to a complete rethink of the entire strategy? So that was the grand vision, an integrated, all-encompassing 5G infrastructure powerhouse, positioned to capture value at every single layer of the network. But as we hinted, something clearly didn't go according to plan. And here's where it gets really interesting and honestly quite dramatic. Crown Castle decided to completely reverse course, sell off its entire fiber segment. A move that, well, it sent ripples through the industry and surprised a lot of longtime observers.
What's truly fascinating, and yeah, dramatic, is just the sheer scale of this reversal. This isn't just, you know, trimming a bit of fat or selling off some non-core side project. This is effectively amputating a limb that was once considered central, maybe even vital, to their future growth story. This kind of wholesale divestiture, it signals a deep, almost painful conviction from management that the future value creation lies entirely elsewhere. Far away from the complexities and the capital demands that came with the fiber business, it's a profound admission, really, that a decade-long strategy built on billions in investment just didn't work out as they'd hoped.
And this wasn't some quiet deal that slipped under the radar either. The announcement came in March 2025, an agreement to sell all fiber and small cell assets for approximately $8.5 billion. That's a huge transaction by any standard, a massive chunk of their overall value.
It truly is a colossal transaction, and it was structured in a pretty complex way too, splitting the assets between two different buyers. That kind of reflects the different operational profiles within that fiber segment. the EQT Active Core Infrastructure Fund acquired the small cells business, valuing those compact urban installations. Meanwhile, Zayo Group Holdings, Inc., a major fiber provider itself, took on the broader fiber solutions business. This split really underscores the distinct market dynamics, the different customer bases, even within what Crown Castle just called its fiber segment.
So the core question then is, why? Why this radical pivot? What was the fundamental reason for shedding such a significant, strategically vital part of their business, a part they'd poured billions into for years?
Well, the primary reason, unequivocally, was persistent underperformance and just an insatiable demand for capital. The fiber business consistently failed to generate the expected returns on the massive amounts of capital Crown Castle had poured into it. It was quite frankly a cash drain. Building out, maintaining, upgrading fiber optic networks, it's incredibly capital intensive, requires massive ongoing investment. You're talking digging trenches, laying cable, securing rights of way, constantly upgrading equipment. The returns just weren't showing up at a level that justified the cost and the complexity.
And the company acknowledged this pretty starkly, didn't they? With a financial declaration that definitely got Wall Street's attention.
Absolutely. In 2024, Crown Castle recorded a staggering $5 billion non-cash goodwill impairment charge, just related to the fiber segment. To put that in perspective for you, imagine you buy a rental property for $1 million, expecting it to generate great income. A few years later, you realize, oops, due to unforeseen issues, the market value of that income stream is way less than you thought.
Yeah.
You have to officially declare that a big chunk of what you paid, say $500,000, is now a loss on your books. That's basically what goodwill impairment is. It's a very public, very painful accounting acknowledgement. A formal writing off of a substantial portion of the past acquisition values they paid for companies like Lightower, Zunasius, NextG, it was a clear, unambiguous admission that the value they thought they'd acquired, the synergies they expected, well, they just weren't materializing.
And this wasn't just a sudden realization, was it? There were earlier signals pointing to trouble, like their 2024 restructuring plan.
Correct. That plan had already given strong hints of issues. They canceled 7,000 planned small cell nodes and significantly cut capital expenditures for the fiber segment by about $300 million. They were already pulling back, you know, adjusting course, trying to right the ship, even before the full divestiture decision was made. It was a clear recognition that the current path just wasn't sustainable.
And beyond the raw financials, there was also this significant difference in just, well, operational complexity between the tower business and the fiber business, almost like running two totally different companies under one roof.
That's a crucial point, yeah. Fiber brought a whole host of different, much more challenging operational risks and complexities compared to macro towers. Think about it. Managing fiber involves navigating tricky public rights of way for construction, repairs, dealing with complex local permitting across countless different towns and cities, managing a much larger, more diverse, often unionized workforce, and facing a fragmented and way more competitive customer landscape, especially in the enterprise fiber market where pricing power is often, well, constrained. Towers, while complex to build initially, are much simpler and more predictable to operate once they're up. The two businesses had fundamentally different operating models, capital needs, and risk profiles.
So, in a way, this wasn't just a tactical financial move to cut losses, but what you might call a strategic capitulation. An admission that the original integrated vision was maybe flawed or just too hard to execute profitably.
Precisely. The sale wasn't just about the numbers. It was a profound acknowledgement that the whole synergistic vision combined towers, small cells, fiber, which had driven their strategy for a decade, it just didn't materialize as planned. The promised benefits of owning the whole stack were outweighed by the operational friction, the capital drain, the lower than expected returns from fiber. It was a clear, decisive shift away from that integrated model, focusing instead on what they do best.
And to lead this refocused strategy, the company also appointed Christian Hillebrand as the new president and CEO. His tenure starts September 2025. A new captain for a newly charted course, you could say.
That's an important detail, absolutely. Appointing new leadership, especially the CEO, really underscores how profound this pivot is. Hillebrand's background and experience will be key in steering the company through this major transformation, making sure they execute this streamlined pure-play tower strategy successfully. It signals a fresh perspective and a clear mandate for change.
Okay, so with the fiber segment gone, Crown Castle emerges as this fundamentally streamlined entity, a dramatic shift from its previous strategy. It's like a company shedding its layers to reveal its core. So what does this all mean for the company's new identity, its focus? What does the new Crown Castle look like?
Right. So upon closing this deal, which is expected first half of 2026, Crown Castle transforms into a pure-play U.S. tower REIT. And this is a crucial distinction, a really significant differentiating factor. It means Crown Castle will be the only publicly traded pure-play U.S. tower company. Its major peers, American Tower and SBA Communications, they both have significant international operations. That adds layers of geopolitical risk, currency risk. Crown Castle's singular focus on the U.S. market offers a very distinct investment profile for people looking for direct exposure just to domestic wireless infrastructure.
So their asset base, once spread across towers, small cells, fiber, will now be solely focused on its roughly 40,000 macro towers. So return to basics, maybe, or perhaps a doubling down on their core strength.
Exactly. And management is really emphasizing that these towers have excellent geographic characteristics. It's not just about having a lot of towers, it's about having them in the right places. Strong presence in all top 100 US markets. This geographic advantage is a key part of their competitive moat, making sure they're positioned where demand for wireless capacity is highest and most consistent.
Let's talk about the key operating metrics for this new Crown Castle. How will investors and analysts measure its success now, with the fiber distractions gone?
Okay, the primary measure, the real heartbeat of the new company, will be organic tower revenue growth. This is kind of a composite metric driven by a few key things. First, new leasing activity, that's new tenants signing up, or existing tenants adding more equipment to the towers. Then you have the contractual escalators, which are incredibly predictable. Typically, 2% annual rent increases built right into their long-term contracts with major carriers. That provides a nice baseline of stable growth. And finally, you subtract churn, which is the rate tenants don't renew leases or, decommission sites.
And on that churn point, the T-Mobile Sprint merger caused some headaches for tower companies for a while, right? As redundant sites were retired. But that impact is finally expected to ease up now.
That's correct, and it's a significant positive. The decommissioning of redundant sites from that merger, which created a period of higher churn for the whole industry, has largely run its course. So that specific headwind should become less of a factor. It allows the underlying organic growth drivers, that insatiable data demand, the ongoing 5G build-out, to shine through more clearly. It basically removes an artificial drag on their growth numbers.
Another interesting point in their new capital strategy, something that really strengthens the foundation of the business, is their focus on securing the base. What does that actually mean?
Securing the base, yeah, that refers to a concerted effort to invest more in actually purchasing the land under their existing towers. Historically, many tower companies, including Crown Castle, leased the land their towers sit on rather than owning it outright. By acquiring the land, Crown Castle gets permanent control of its most critical sites. It eliminates future ground lease expenses, basically rent payments that can go up over time. This move further strengthens the long-term predictability of their cash flows and reduces a potential future headache. It's a very smart long-term play to solidify those foundational assets.
This strategic simplification, focusing just on macro towers, it really enhances their economic moat, doesn't it? If we connect this to the bigger picture, the business model for macro towers is incredibly robust, almost uniquely so in infrastructure.
It is, without a doubt, exceptionally strong and durable. The economic moat of tower companies comes from multiple layers of protection. First, incredibly high barriers to entry. The sheer capital needed to build a network of 40,000 optimally located towers, staggering. Then there's the complex, often contentious process of zoning and permitting locally. Getting approval for a new tower can be a years-long battle involving community meetings, environmental reviews, navigating bureaucracy. These are not easily replicated assets. And then there's the scalability we talked about, the shared infrastructure economics. Once a tower is built, adding more tenants costs very little incrementally. Each new tenant is almost pure profit, boosting cash flow and returns as a tower matures. It's a remarkably powerful, defensible business model, exceptionally hard to break into or compete with once established. You can't just, drop a new cell tower anywhere you want, and the ones already there become incredibly valuable real estate.
Right, but Crown Castle isn't operating in a vacuum, obviously. It's a key part of this dynamic, rapidly growing industry that fuels our whole digital economy. So what are the really big forces driving demand for their services? And how does this new focused company fit into that ever-expanding picture?
Well, the single biggest tailwind, the fundamental driver behind all this, is just the explosive, relentless growth in U.S. wireless data consumption. This isn't just a trend, it's a societal transformation. According to data from CTIA, the Wireless Industry Association, U.S. wireless networks carried an astonishing 100.1 trillion megabytes of data in 2023.
100 trillion megabytes. That's just
Yeah.
a mind-boggling number. And what's even more amazing is that's an 89% increase from just 2021. Wow. That's a huge jump in a very short time. Feels like we're barely keeping up.
Precisely. This insatiable demand for data streaming, HD video, video calls, cloud gaming, the Internet of Things, it's the fundamental force. It compels carriers to continually invest massive amounts in their networks, not just expanding coverage, but critically enhancing capacity and speed. The U.S. wireless industry alone invested $30 billion in CapEx in 2023, contributing to a cumulative total of $705 billion to date. These are colossal numbers. They underscore the ongoing, non-negotiable need for infrastructure upgrades. This isn't like discretionary spending for carriers. It's essential to stop their networks getting overwhelmed and keep customers happy, keep market share.
An industry forecast project, continued strong growth for wireless infrastructure right through the early 2030s, with North America leading the way. So this isn't some fleeting trend that might vanish next year. It's a long-term structural shift.
Not at all. And it's all tied into the multi-year 5G investment cycle, which has these distinct sort of sequential phases, each impacting tower demand differently. The initial phase focused on establishing broad coverage using low-band spectrum. That's largely done. We're now seeing 5G covering around 95% of the U.S. population. That's kind of the first blanket.
Okay, so we've mostly got that initial blanket coverage. What's the current, more capital-intensive phase that's directly benefiting Crown Castle's towers right now?
The current phase is intensely focused on capacity. This involves the widespread deployment of mid-band spectrum, often called C-band. It offers a really compelling blend of speed and coverage faster than low band, but better reach than millimeter wave. This phase directly significantly benefits tower owners like Crown Castle because carriers have to add new, larger antennas, radios, and associated equipment to existing macro towers to broadcast these new frequencies. This means more gear, more weight, and more revenue for the tower companies. This is where Crown Castle is now strategically focusing its resources as this capital-intensive phase is expected to continue for several more years.
And what's the next anticipated phase in the 5G rollout? The one some might argue Crown Castle is now deliberately stepping away from by selling its small cell assets.
That would be densification. This is where small cells and millimeter wave spectrum really come into their own, providing that surgical ultra-high capacity in the most congested urban spots. Think incredibly fast speeds, but in a very specific small area. This phase involves a much greater spread of smaller sites closer to the end user.
Right, and this brings us back to Crown Castle's strategic bet. They decided to sell their small cell business right on the cusp of this densification phase, a phase many saw as the next big thing for 5G.
That's a key point, yeah, and a crucial decision. Crown Castle is effectively betting that the returns generated from the ongoing capacity build-out on its macro towers, this current mid-band rollout, will be superior, more predictable, and less capital-intensive on a risk-adjusted basis compared to the potential returns from small cell densification, which are far more complex and costly. They are deliberately seeding this future growth avenue of localized densification to competitors and specialized fiber providers. They're choosing focus and a clearer path to profit over broad, complex reach. It's a definite strategic trade-off.
This raises an important question, though. How does Crown Castle stack up against its, well, formidable rivals in this market? And what does its new pure-play status mean for you as an investor or someone trying to get the lay of the land?
Yeah, the U.S. tower industry, as we discussed, it's largely an oligopoly, dominated by three publicly traded REITs. Crown Castle's pivot further differentiates it within this concentrated market. First, you have American Tower, AMT. They're the largest by market cap and global portfolio, with nearly 150,000 sites globally. Their international exposure is vast: Latin America, Africa, Europe, Asia Pacific, so they offer global diversification.
So American Tower is truly global, a sprawling empire. Unlike the new Crown Castle, which is now entirely U.S.-focused, that's a fundamental difference right there.
Precisely. Then there's SBA Communications, SBAC, the third major player. While they have a strong U.S. presence, they also have a meaningful and growing international footprint, particularly in the Americas and Africa. So, like American Tower, not purely domestic.
And then there's Crown Castle, CCI. Post-divestiture, they will be the only U.S.-centric pure-play tower company among these public peers. This offers a very targeted investment opportunity for those who want direct exposure to the U.S. wireless market without the, you know, complexities of international operations, currency swings, or other diversified business lines. It's a simpler, clearer proposition.
Yeah, and if we look at some comparative metrics from, say, August 2025, you see their positioning clearly. U.S. tower count, CCI has around 40,000, American Tower about 42,135, SBA Communications roughly 17,479. So domestically, CCI is right there at the top in terms of scale. Their market cap is around $44.8 billion compared to AMT's $95.3 billion and SBCC's $24.0 billion.
And what about the dividend yield? That's often a big factor for REIT investors looking for income.
Right. Post-dividend cut, Crown Castle's forward dividend yield is around 4.1%. That's still higher than American Tower's at about 3.1% and SBA Communications at roughly 2.0%. So even with the reduction, CCI offers a comparatively higher yield within its direct peer group, which might appeal to a specific segment of investors.
And the economic moat for these tower companies, just to reiterate, is incredibly strong, right? A truly defensible business. Can you maybe give another example of why?
It's exceptionally strong and durable. Yeah, almost unmatched in stability. The primary source is the strategic, often irreplaceable location of their assets. Imagine trying to build a new network of 40,000 towers today. The capital, astronomical. But that's just the start. You'd face this insane gauntlet of local zoning laws, environmental regs, community opposition, permitting processes in thousands of different places. Each new tower can take years to get approved, if it gets approved at all. This makes it exceedingly hard, almost impossible, for new competitors to replicate an existing, optimally located portfolio. These are genuinely scarce assets, and like we said, the shared infrastructure economics mean the incremental cost to add more tenants to an existing tower is minimal. Each new tenant is a high-margin revenue stream. It's a very, very difficult business to break into or compete with once established. Powerful, long-term competitive advantage.
Okay, a strategic shift this big, shedding an $8.5 billion segment, obviously comes with a major financial overhaul. It impacts everything, right? How we interpret past performance, the company's entire future outlook, capital management. Let's really unpack the numbers here and understand how Crown Castle plans to manage its money going forward.
Yeah, Crown Castle's historical performance from 2022 to 2024 reflects that combined tower and fiber entity. And it definitely shows a mixed picture, especially leading up to this big divestiture decision. It really tells a story of a company grappling with its dual identity.
Looking at site rental revenues, we saw growth from $6.289 billion in 2022 up to $6.532 billion in 2023. But then a noticeable decline in 2024 down to $6.358 billion. Mm. What specifically drove that decline beyond just the headline number?
Okay, the 2024 decline was mainly due to a few non-recurring factors. Important to distinguish these from underlying operational weakness. It was largely impacted by the absence of those Sprint cancellation payments that had boosted prior years. That was a one-time benefit from the T-Mobile Sprint merger. There were also reductions in non-cash straight-line revenues and amortization of prepaid rent. These are accounting adjustments, not really a direct indicator of declining demand for their actual services. So it wasn't purely organic operational decline, more like these one-off payments ending and some accounting nuances creating a headwind.
And then there's net income, where the numbers get truly dramatic, from a profit of $1.675 billion in 2022 and $1.502 billion in 2023. Crown Castle reported a staggering $3.93 billion loss in 2024. Wow. That's not just a swing. That's a monumental plunge into the red.
It is indeed a dramatic, attention-grabbing number. And it was almost entirely due to that massive $5.8 billion non-cash goodwill impairment charge related to the fiber segment we talked about earlier. Without that accounting write-off, the company would have been solidly profitable. This was the explicit financial acknowledgement of the fiber business's significant underperformance relative to what they paid for it. It's a huge, albeit non-cash, write-off that just massively skewed the net income figure for 2024. Adjusted EBITDA and AFFO, which give a clearer picture of cash generation, they also peaked in 2023 before declining in 2024, partly due to these revenue pressures and also about $40 million in advisory fees they incurred during the strategic review and proxy contest.
Okay, so those historical numbers reflect a company in flux. But what does the forward-looking 2025 outlook tell us for the pure-play tower business now that it's unburdened by fiber?
Right. The 2025 outlook naturally shows lower absolute numbers, which makes sense with the fiber segment completely removed from the consolidated entity. Site rental revenues are projected around $3.999 billion to $4.04 billion. adjusted EBITDA between $2.78 billion and $2.83 billion, and AFFO between $1.81 billion and $1.86 billion. Now, while these are lower in absolute terms, the key takeaway is that they represent a more focused, potentially higher margin, and significantly less capital-intensive stream of revenue and cash flow, reflecting the new streamlined strategy.
And what does that mean for AFFO per share? That's a number many REIT investors watch very closely.
The midpoint AFFO per share is projected at approximately $4.20 for 2025. Now, this is a significant drop from the $6.98 reported in 2024 for the combined company. However, it's crucial to understand that this new $4.20 figure is the baseline for the streamlined tower business going forward. Management also gave pro forma annualized AFFO projections of $2.27 billion to $2.42 billion after the sale closes and debt is repaid. That'll be the new foundation for future growth and the basis for their dividend policy. It's about setting a new, more sustainable starting point.
Okay, now let's get into the capital allocation strategy overhaul. Because that $8.5 billion in sale proceeds, that's a huge lever for change here. How are they planning to use that substantial sum?
This is where the strategy really shifts, yeah. Approximately $6 billion of the proceeds are explicitly earmarked for debt repayment, which will significantly reduce their gross debt. However, and here's where it gets particularly interesting, maybe a bit more aggressive, the company is simultaneously adopting a new higher leverage target. They're aiming for 6.0x to 6.5x net debt/EBITDA. That's up from their previous, more conservative level of around 5.5x.
Huh. That seems like a more aggressive stance, especially after selling assets. Usually you'd expect a company to deleverage after a big sale like this. Are they prepared for higher interest rates, for example, with this increased leverage?
That's a critical observation, and it's definitely a topic analysts are discussing. They've managed their existing debt pretty prudently. Over 90% of their debt is fixed rate, and they have limited maturities through 2025, which does mitigate near-term interest rate risk. But the higher target leverage is a deliberate choice. Management's rationale is that with the significantly de-risked and highly predictable cash flows of a pure-play tower business, they can afford to operate with a greater debt load while still maintaining financial flexibility. They believe this higher leverage, combined with the other capital allocation decisions, will ultimately be more accretive to shareholder value.
And then there's the dividend policy. Always a huge factor for REIT investors, often relying on that consistent income. There's been a significant cut here, right?
A substantial one, yeah. And this is perhaps the most direct hit for many traditional income-focused investors. The quarterly dividend was reduced by about 32% from 1.565 down to 1.0625 per share, effective Q2 2025. That sets an annual target of $4.25 per share. This new policy targets a dividend payout ratio of 75-80% of AFFO. This is a deliberate move to provide much more financial flexibility and retain cash flow compared to their previous policy, which often had them paying out a very high percentage of AFFO. It allows them to fund share repurchases and strategic land acquisitions internally rather than relying solely on debt or equity issuance.
What about share repurchases? This marks a major shift in how they return capital to shareholders.
It absolutely does. The company plans to use the remaining sale proceeds after paying down debt to fund a new $3.0 billion share repurchase program. The program will kick in once the transaction closes. This is a significant signal for management. By buying back shares, they're essentially saying they believe their stock is undervalued at current prices and that repurchases will be an accretive use of capital, boosting earnings per share for remaining shareholders. It's a clear pivot towards active capital management beyond just the dividend.
And CapEx, capital expenditures, will change dramatically too, right? Mm. Shedding those heavy investment needs of fiber.
Drastically. Discretionary CapEx for the ongoing tower operations is projected to be only $185 million in 2025. This is a stark reduction from the combined company's 2024 projection of $1.2 billion to $1.3 billion, most of which, as we discussed, was for that capital-hungry fiber segment. Future CapEx will be narrowly focused on value-adding tower modifications for new tenants and, crucially, those strategic purchases of land beneath existing towers to secure their long-term base. This reduced CapEx need means significantly more free cash flow for other capital allocation priorities.
What's fascinating here is this aggressive financial posture, the higher leverage target, the big dividend cut, even as they streamline the business. This certainly raises an important question. What message does this send to credit agencies and to those investors who traditionally relied on Crown Castle for consistent dividend growth? It feels like a bold gamble.
That's a critical point, and you're right, it is a bold gamble. The credit rating agencies have indeed reacted with caution. Moody's affirmed their Big A3 rating, but slabbed a negative outlook on it, specifically citing the company's new, higher leverage target of 6.0 by 6.5x as a key concern. S&P Global Ratings, while affirming BBB, put their ratings on credit watch negative, signaling a potential downgrade pending review of the final capital structure, and Fitch also have a BBB Plus rating with a negative outlook.
So even though they're selling assets, which usually looks like deleveraging, the plan to use a big chunk for buybacks and then aim for higher target leverage is what's making the ratings agencies nervous. It's a different kind of risk profile they're adopting.
Exactly. It suggests that while the operational business risk of the company will decrease by shedding the volatile fiber segment, the financial risk might actually increase because of the higher debt load. It's a classic trade-off. Management believes the improved operational profile justifies higher financial leverage, but the credit agencies are being more conservative. This dynamic is a critical thing to watch, as a downgrade could lead to higher borrowing costs, impacting their financial flexibility down the road. It's a delicate balancing act they've chosen.
Okay, so what does this all mean for you, the investor, looking at Crown Castle today? Is this a buy, a hold, or maybe a sell? It's a complex picture, lots of moving parts, and the market itself is still trying to figure out this massive transformation.
It certainly is complex, yeah, and the market is definitely recalibrating. Historically, Crown Castle often traded at a valuation discount compared to its larger peer, American Tower. This discount was frequently attributed to two main things. First, its U.S.-only focus, whereas AMT offered perceived benefits of international diversification. And second, the market's skepticism about the returns on CCI's significant and, as it turned out, underperforming fiber investments.
Now, looking at current multiples, based on forward estimates, the picture is nuanced. It tells a different story. For instance, the enterprise value to adjusted EBITDA is around 22.4x. That's similar to American Tower, but still looks higher than SBA Communications. Mm-hmm. However, the estimated forward price to AFO, PAYFO multiple for Crown Castle is around 24.5x, which appears quite high relative to SBA Communications' 17.1x. What's going on there?
That apparent higher PAYFO for CCI in forward estimates reflects a few things. The reduced absolute AFO base after selling fiber, and the market still trying to price in this new streamlined entity. The bull case for Crown Castle largely hinges on the idea that this historical discount, along with any current multiple oddities, should narrow as the company successfully executes its pure play, higher margin tower strategy. The argument is the market hasn't fully appreciated the quality and predictability of the new cash flows yet.
And then there's the dividend yield analysis, as we mentioned, always crucial for REITs, a big factor for many investors. What does the new reduced dividend mean for its appeal to these income-focused folks?
Right. With the new annual dividend of $4.25 per share, Crown Castle's forward yield is about 4.1% based on a recent stock price around $103. When we compare this to benchmarks, it's now closely aligned with the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield, which has been hovering around 4.26%. It's also largely in line with the average dividend yield for the FTSE Nareit All Equity REITs Index, recently reported at 4.01%.
So the key insight here is that Crown Castle no longer offers a significant yield premium over either the risk-free rate or the broader REIT sector average. That feels like a fundamental shift in its investment proposition, doesn't it?
It is indeed a fundamental shift. For traditional income-focused REIT investors, this could significantly reduce the stock's appeal. They're no longer being paid a substantial premium to take on the equity-specific risks of the business. It means the investment thesis for Crown Castle shifts away from being primarily a pure dividend play. It moves more towards total return potential, driven by capital appreciation from earnings growth and multiple expansion, alongside a more moderate dividend.
This leads us right into the heart of the investor debate. The bull case versus the bear case for Crown Castle today. Let's start with the bull case. What makes Crown Castle look attractive to optimistic investors right now?
Okay, the bull case argues that the market simply isn't fully crediting the company for this decisive transformation into a pure play, higher margin, and significantly less capital intensive tower operator. Proponents believe that successful execution of the asset sale, plus the debt reduction, and especially the new $3.0 billion accretive share buyback program, should lead to multiple expansion, allowing it to trade more in line with its pure play nature, narrowing that historical discount. They also point to any acceleration in organic tower leasing growth beyond the guided 4.5% range, maybe driven by a new wave of carrier network investment as a strong positive catalyst the market might be underestimating. The argument is basically the fiber business was dragging down the valuation, and now the true quality of the tower assets can shine.
Okay, so that's the optimistic view. But what about the bear case? What are the arguments from those who are more cautious, maybe even bearish, on Crown Castle right now?
The bear case contends that the current valuation, or even a discount, is actually warranted. They point to a lower absolute growth profile for the new Crown Castle without the fiber business's potential, however flawed it was. They highlight the significant dividend cut as a factor that will alienate a large segment of traditional income investors, leading to selling pressure. Furthermore, they emphasize the considerable execution risk during this complex transition, the operational separation, the new CEO taking over. This is compounded by the new higher leverage target, which, despite management's reasoning, adds a layer of financial risk some investors just aren't comfortable with. They argue these factors together justify a more cautious valuation and that any perceived benefits are probably already priced in.
So if we connect this to the bigger picture, the market is essentially in a wait-and-see mode, isn't it? Waiting to see if management can flawlessly execute this really complex pivot. What's fascinating here is that the future valuation seems less about the past and entirely about future execution and the inherent stability of those tower cash flows.
Exactly. It's a classic prove-it moment for the new management and the newly defined strategy. The long-term predictability and high incremental margins of the core tower business. Undeniable strengths. But successfully navigating the transition, demonstrating disciplined capital allocation with that higher leverage, and consistently delivering organic tower growth, those will be absolutely key to unlocking value and convincing skeptical investors. The story is far from over.
Right. Every investment comes with risks. And Crown Castle, despite its clearer focus now, still faces some pretty significant ones. Things that you as a potential investor or just an informed observer need to be really aware of. Shedding complexity doesn't mean shedding all risk. It just concentrates it in different areas, maybe.
That's a critical point, yeah. And it raises an important question. While they've shed the operational complexity of fiber, have they arguably concentrated their risk profile more onto their largest customers and the flawless execution of this transition? It's a calculated trade-off, and the market will be watching these specific risks very closely.
Let's start with what's arguably the most significant risk, one inherent to the tower industry, extreme customer concentration.
This cannot be overstated, really. As of 2024, roughly 74% of Crown Castle's site rental revenues came from just three customers. T-Mobile accounted for a huge 35%, AT&T for 20%, and Verizon for 19%. This level of concentration makes the company highly sensitive to their capital spending cycles, which can fluctuate year to year, and crucially to any future industry consolidation. For instance, the T-Mobile-Sprint merger, as we discussed, already caused a multi-year period of higher churn for tower companies as redundant sites were shut down. This concentration also gives these major carriers significant negotiating leverage during contract renewals because they represent such a huge chunk of Crown Castle's revenue.
Okay, beyond that customer concentration, there are significant execution and strategic risks during this major pivot, especially given the scale of the sale and the management change.
Absolutely. The $8.5 billion fiber sale is a complex transaction. It needs not only agreement from two buyers, but also various regulatory approvals. So there's always transaction closing risk, potential for delays, obstacles, maybe even the deal falling apart. Then there's operational separation risk. Untangling an integrated business that shared resources, people, systems for a decade. Incredibly complex. There could be disruptions, loss of key people, failure to achieve the cost savings and efficiencies they expect from the streamlined company. And of course, the management transition risk. A new CEO, Christian Hillebrand, coming in during such a critical strategic pivot introduces uncertainty as he sets his own vision and builds his team.
And we can't ignore the broader market and economic risks, which can impact even the most stable infrastructure businesses.
Correct. As a REIT, Crown Castle is particularly sensitive to interest rate changes. Higher long-term rates increase their cost of capital for financing operations and making those strategic land purchases. Critically, higher rates also make the company's dividend yield less competitive compared to safer fixed income options like treasury bonds, which can put downward pressure on the stock price. An economic slowdown or recession is also a risk. If the economy really falters, carriers could cut back or delay network spending, directly reducing demand for new leases and amendments on CCI's towers, hitting their organic growth.
Finally, let's touch on long-term technological and regulatory risks. While macro towers seem foundational, are they truly immune to disruption way down the line?
Well, while macro towers are indeed foundational and highly durable, long-term technological risks do exist, though they are probably further out on the horizon. The ongoing development of alternative tech, like more capable low-Earth orbit LEO satellite networks, think Starlink or other wireless solutions we haven't even thought of yet, could potentially reduce reliance on ground-based towers for certain uses or in specific areas. It's not an immediate threat, but it's a long-term horizon risk that technology always brings. And then there are regulatory and zoning risks. The ability to modify existing towers or build new ones is always subject to federal, state, local rules. Changes in these laws could make it harder or more costly to maintain and upgrade their assets or even restrict their ability to expand. It's an operating environment that requires constant vigilance.
So today, we've really unpacked the dramatic transformation underway at Crown Castle. From this ambitious, diversified infrastructure provider chasing a broad vision of integrated 5G assets, it's pivoting decisively back to its roots. A pure-play U.S. macro tower operator. This isn't just some corporate reshuffle. It's a really high-stakes bet on where the most durable, predictable value truly lies in this rapidly evolving 5G era. They've decided to go all in on their deepest moat asset.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, Crown Castle's journey really illustrates the constant, sometimes brutal, reevaluation companies have to undertake in fast-moving, capital-intensive industries. They're effectively trading a vision of broad diversification, which proved too complex, too capital-intensive for perceived stability, higher profitability, and clearer focus of a deeply moated core business. The real challenge and the ultimate test of their new strategy will be whether the market truly values that focus and simplicity over the scale and diversified reach they once chased. It's a compelling corporate narrative, really, of evolution and strategic realignment.
Consider this. Crown Castle's pivot signals this clear, resounding belief that the most valuable real estate in the digital age isn't just any piece of infrastructure, but rather the uniquely scarce, difficult to replicate, and highly profitable macro tower. It's a testament to the enduring power of economic moats. So what other industries might see companies narrowing their focus, maybe shedding diversified assets to double down on their deepest moat core? And what does that mean for the broader economy and for the companies that choose that path versus those that keep chasing broader, more complex growth?
We encourage you to reflect on how companies navigate such significant strategic shifts, what sacrifices they're willing to make, and what it ultimately means for their long-term value. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.